Save big this holiday season. All in the Kroger app.
Buy two, get three free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up. Then get a flavorful Kroger spiral sliced ham for 89 cents a pound with an additional $25 purchase. Limit two, all with your card.
Shop these deals at your local Kroger today. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. And now I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free and each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
They had the names and they blew it. Sorry, wrong movie.
Welcome to Wreckatopia, a happy home for recommended movies, TV shows, music, video games, foodstuffs, and more from three people you can definitely trust. Trustability varies by region, no guarantees implied. Now, here are your hosts, Chris Atkinson, Jeremy Scott, and Aaron Dicer.
We'll take it to Ben when I say it's time.
It's time, Robbie. It's time. They knew, and they let it happen. Two kids.
Hello, everybody. It's episode 145 of Wreckatopia. Today's big recommend is Spotlight. My name is Chris Atkinson, joined by Jeremy Scott.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then we are joined by Aaron Dicer as well.
Heidely ho, Cinerinos.
That's correct. See,
I was wondering going in how cute Aaron was going to be allowed to be today with this movie topic, we'll find out when we get to his synopsis.
Mm-hmm.
And once again, I'd like to welcome chat, who have come out here to watch us talk about movies on a Tuesday. We'll go on to our small recommends.
It's no big deal.
It's so small and light.
It's small. It's tiny. It's petite. It's wee.
I'll start us off. My movie is The Order. It's just it's out in theaters right now. It stars Jude Law and Nicholas Holt. This is a story from the 80s, I believe in Colorado. Where Jude Law is an FBI guy who's just been sent to Colorado to, I don't know, as a change in change of assignment, change of scenery, whatever. And the movie begins with some white supremacists who go into the woods and they kill one of their own for some reason, which sets off this big mystery as to why this person died and what's going on. And so Jude Law, of course, ends up discovering that there's a huge white supremacist population that's in the area, and they immediately cast suspicion over them as to why. There's also a lot of bank robberies and things like that going on that these white supremacist groups are doing. It's not really their MO, so they're trying to figure out what's the connection between all of this. And so we find out that Nicholas Holt is a part of this group. And I think I'm going to leave it there sort of as for you to discover a lot of things about this. This is sort of a mystery thriller mostly. I don't really know if it's much mystery involved in this. It's more about kind of a procedural in some ways, but you go to see this movie because Jude Law is awesome, because Nicholas Holt's having the year of the 2024 year is his, it's all his apparently. It's amazing that little kid from About a Boy is one of our best actors right now going.
That's nuts.
So, this is really, really good stuff. Definitely go see it if you can find it at your local theater.
I mean, at this point, and I don't think I've even said this recently, Nicholas Holt being in your movie will make me watch your movie.
Yeah, season passes. Yeah.
He's great, but he's got so much range. Like, he can be great in so many different ways. And I think the best is yet to come with him. He's awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
I really enjoyed this movie too, and that's saying something because it's not like typically my favorite kind of movie. It's a very, you know, gritty cops and, you know, Nazi robbers kind of story. but the way it deals with white supremacy and things like that is I think really meaningful, and it takes a really interesting look at that stuff. And yeah, Jude Law is awesome. The performances all around are just great. So it feels like an 80s cop thriller. Like, it really feels like it could have been made 40 years ago. It's a fun watch for sure.
Awesome.
All right, hey, Aaron, you know, when you get, oh, I'm sorry. I was going to get Aaron since he was on the
oh, you're right. Nope, sorry. Yep.
I used to make the big recommend person go first, and last week I kind of slipped a bit, and so I'm like, I'm going to slip again this week to kind of re-get the order back to what we're doing next time, so whatever.
I'm going to talk about A Complete Unknown. I loved this movie. Mm-hmm. This is the Timothée Chalamet, mm-hmm. Bob Dylan movie. Now, I want to say this with a caveat. I'm a sucker for a good musical biopic, whereas for many people after the Dewey Cox story came out, it is harder to watch these kind of movies because it absolutely skewered the formula in such a precise and accurate way. So if that's your mindset, yes, you're going to roll your eye. I mean, this has some of that stuff in it. But for me, that stuff actually kind of works. And I think specifically it works in this one because Timothée Chalamet is so good in this role. And I really think he is kind of Leonardo DiCaprio-ing his career here, where he's trying to find his way to what it means to be a prestige actor after, you know, being, you know, teeny bopper, heartthrob, you know, kind of, you know, beginning. So, and I think he's on the way because I think he's really good here. I think Ed Norton is phenomenal in this movie. It's really interesting. It's really good. Depending on how much you know about the Bob Dylan story, how he came up, it really covers the first part of that as he transitions from folk music eventually to guitars and rock and roll and the impact that had on the folk music industry and the reaction. So there are some of those key, just great scenes, which I think you would expect from, why is the director's name just slipping my brain? Yeah, by James Mangold. Like, he just knows how to direct a good scene, and there are several of those in this movie where you just kind of come out, oh yeah, that was like quality filmmaking stuff. So I highly recommend it. It's technically out as this podcast drops, but that may be limited release. It goes wide on Christmas or the day before Christmas, so it'll be out in a couple days if it's not out yet.
The biggest hurdle for me here is, haven't we already had a handful of Bob Dylan movies in the last 20 years?
Like, yeah, we had that, whatever it was. I always confuse it because there's so many, like, I'm still here or I'm not there or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's one of those titles is a Bob Dylan. Can't remember what it is. But, like, they did it. That was kind of a fictionalized everybody, like, everybody, all the actors were, there were different actors playing Bob Dylan and all of that. I don't know if they've gone a full-blown biography like this.
No, I don't think so. I'm Not There, I think, is the one.
I'm Not There.
I'm but still not like, there.
Yeah, well, there's the Joaquin Phoenix thing where he's like being an asshole and whatever the whole movie.
Oh, yeah.
Where he's like, I'm ruining my career, but it's really just a performance piece so that he can be an asshole.
Yeah.
And it's worth mentioning, I'm Not There came out 17 years ago, almost two decades ago. So
that's yesterday, Aaron.
That's true.
Fair enough.
Do you not know how time moves?
Sorry, fair. I forgot. That's fair.
I'm going to see this in a few days. I've got tickets for it. So I'm looking forward to it. Timothée Chalamet came out to Nashville for a Belcourt screening of Did this he? Movie. Yeah, I think he came out and said a few words about it before it came on. So
I mean, just as a guy who showed up to his own lookalike contest. So
exactly. You know. He seems to be one of these kind of guys, man. He really kind of gets it, I guess. You know, one of those type of things. So anyway.
Yeah.
All right. I just want to tell you who's really good at television, and his name is Michael Schur. And he co-executive produced The Office, and then after that went on to create Parks and Rec, Brooklyn Nine-Nine, and The Good Place. All of which are critically acclaimed and really funny. And he has now released a new series, again with Ted Danson, on Netflix called A Man on the Inside. Yesterday, actually, as we record this on the 17th, it was announced that it's been picked up for a season two. This is loosely based on an award-winning documentary about... I'll just tell you what the show is. A man believes his mom's jewelry has been stolen in a long-term care facility. It's independent living, and then there's a part of it that's memory care. And he goes to a PI, and she can't figure out how to crack this case because she can't get in the building until she devises a plan to hire an older actor to go in pretending to be a resident and get to know the residents and figure out who stole the jewelry. And so that's how Ted Danson comes into it. Now, Ted Danson's character, his wife, has passed away a year ago after dealing with dementia. And so even seeing the memory care wing the first time he's in the facility almost gives him kind of a panic attack. This is not The Good Place. This has many laughs, but it is not a comedy as much as it is I don't know, heartfelt, warm stories about humanity. And Ted Danson, I think at this point, deserves to be in that upper tier of all-time television comedy actors, along with Lucille Ball and Bob Newhart and Julia Louis-Dreyfus. He's just had hit after hit, and he brings the warmth in this show in a way, like people told me to prepare to cry at the end of The Good Place. I didn't. I was touched, but I didn't cry. I cried watching this show twice. It really got me in the feels, and it ends suggesting there might be a second season. Now we know there will be. Only 8 episodes, half an hour each on Netflix. I really think if you like any of this guy's previous shows, you should give this a look.
Yeah. Definitely.
I'm 3 episodes in and I'm enjoying it quite a bit. You mentioned the tone, which I think is really important because there's this new style of show. I'm going to put this in Shrinking in the same tonal category, Shrinking on Apple TV Plus, where we've heard of like dramedies, where it's a drama that has some humor or whatever. This is like even more like it's almost like a sitcom, like sit dramedy, maybe. I don't know, like it's, there's something about it that feels like it's sitcom structured, but it's willing to really live in the emotions of it and live in the authenticity of it, like most sitcoms don't, or maybe only occasionally do. And I really like that. I like it in Shrinking and I like it here. That doesn't mean it's not laugh out loud funny. It is laugh out loud funny on occasion. Yep. I just want to mention one of my favorite lines from the first episode where they're in a group and all the older people who live at this long-term care facility are complaining about everything. You know, one person's like, the food is too salty. And the next person's like, the food isn't salty enough. And then, you know, they complain through all this stuff. And then finally it gets to a guy and he goes like, everything tastes like pennies and all our arms are numb. And then and somebody pushes like an emergency button and you just see him get wheeled out. It's just like, it just cracked me up. And like, he misunderstood his own symptoms as something that was the fault. Anyways, it made me laugh a lot. So yeah, there's a lot. Lots of good humor here as well.
Yeah, I'm glad that you're liking it so far.
And also for obscure references, Michael Schur was also the moniker of Ken Tremendous on Fire Joe Morgan, the website that talked about bad sports announcing and everything. They set that up during a writer strike, and that was hilarious as well. So yeah, there's a guy who knows what he's doing in the industry for sure.
And he casts a lot of his former people in this show, by the way, not just Ted Danson. And one I wanted to point out specifically is Stephanie Beatriz, who in Brooklyn Nine-Nine played this, you know, just like hard edged, you know, no nonsense. And she is gets to be more of kind of her natural personality in this, which is, you know, delightful and joyful. And, you know, so if you're used to Brooklyn Nine-Nine, you may watch this and not even recognize her. Like that's, it makes you realize how good her performance in Brooklyn Nine-Nine was when you watch her in this. She's really good.
I saw her in a couple of other things besides Brooklyn Nine-Nine. And I was at both times, I was like, who's that? And I had to look. I had to look her up, and it was it's Stephanie Beatriz. Okay,
yeah.
All right. Going on to our big recommend, which is Spotlight, and it is Aaron's pick. So, Aaron, take it away.
I'm fine. It's just that you're so big.
It's so huge.
It's a good rule, but this is bigger than rules.
It's bigger on the inside.
Is it?
I noticed.
Spotlight arrived in one of the greatest movie years of all time, 2015. Based on the true story of the Boston Globe uncovering the depth of corruption and the Catholic Church's continued cover-up of pedophilia and abuse from its priest. It was directed by Tom McCarthy and made almost $100 million at the box office with its combination of sunny subject matter and hot and steamy journalism. Mm-hmm. We begin at a Boston police station in 1976, where it's clear something has happened that requires a lack of media exposure and a cover-up. A priest walks in and two priests walk out, and the title says Spotlight. We cut forward to the summer of 2001 at the Boston Globe, where Roger Sterling and Batman are honoring the departure of a colleague. That's Walter and Ben. Walter, who's also called Robbie, heads up what's called the Spotlight team with Mike, played by Mark Ruffalo, Sasha, played by Rachel McAdams, and Maddie, played by Brian D'Arcy James. They fill the other three slots on this investigative team. Ben, we find out, manages editorial and offers oversight. We find out during an expository meeting with the new boss, Marty, played by Liev Schreiber, that this four-person team takes their time doing hardcore investigatory material, and for Marty, maybe that might mean the team is on the chopping block. Back at HQ, Marty's getting to know other people on the staff in a roundtable meeting, and the Hulk is getting curious about things because that's what he does. Marty then proposes looking into the story of kids abused by a priest named Gagan over the last 30 years. There's a lawyer who says they have proof, but that's protected info, and they would need to sue to access the documents. Sue the church, says a dozen different people, and Marty continues to answer yes. At a meeting between the bigwigs with Marty, Walter, and Ben, Marty suggests that since Spotlight is picking their own projects, he recommends them picking the Gagan case. At the expense of doing an expose on the Boston PD, they do pick it, and Robbie suggests an extra level of discretion. So the team gets to work. We follow each of them as they take the first steps towards doing journalism. Robbie and Sasha meet with lawyer Eric McLeish, played by Billy Crudup, about his cases and find out how tough it is to work with the victims. The timeline sucks because people don't come forward till they're older and people don't want to be in the spotlight, literally. Mike then meets with another lawyer named Garabedian, played by Stanley Tucci, about his cases, and he finds out how tough it is to go against the church because they think in centuries and go after people hard. So both sides are going to be difficult. Sasha finds someone from SNAP, which truly is a crummy acronym, but also a possible insight to connecting with victims and getting some background. The team then discovers another predator priest, and when Mark Ruffalo tells Ben about it at a Sox game, we get the sense that Ben isn't all too keen on pursuing it and chasing their tails. Robbie, meanwhile, is out on a golf course trying to get info from another lawyer friend and runs into another dead end. Ruffalo, on the other hand, runs into work to chat with Walter about if they should ignore the haters, and Walter says it's time to ignore everyone. And we're getting the sense that they are going to have to journalism the crap out of this. Marty gets stonewalled by the Cardinal, and the crew brings in Saviano, who's the head of SNAP, and he lays out how the grooming happens and the trauma that results from it, and that there are 13 priests in Boston that he knows about that could be convicted. The team remains open but skeptical, like they're journalists or something. Mike, who can't stop moving, tracks down Garabedian again and convinces him to think about connecting him with some of the victims of Gagan. Sasha meets with someone at a diner, and Mike interviews someone at Garabedian's office. We cut back and forth as these two victims tell their horrific stories, and Sasha rightly identifies that words are important and they should be detailed so people know the depth of the depravity. Sasha finds out that her victim went to McLeish for legal help and that they clearly have a fourth priest involved. Robbie then uses this info to tell Ben it's time to journalism even harder, and he reluctantly agrees. Part of the crew then spend some time with a dead rat and some printed records that identify when and where all the priests served, and a pattern emerges. Anytime a priest is caught, they are put on quote-unquote sick leave. And honestly, when someone is this kind of sick, I think the leave part should be forever, but maybe that's just me. But nope, they all seem to eventually come back. The crew immediately knows they have some more journalism to journalize and take the records up to the office. Sasha and Robbie go back to tell McLeish, who can't admit any settlements against any of the priests his clients settled with, and he continues to dodge. The crew confirms to Ben that they're becoming confident that is indeed 13 priests, and Ben is starting to be on board. Mark meets with Garbizian again, whose name I probably have pronounced three different ways at this point, where they discuss how it usually takes an outsider to really bring these things down. Just as we cut to proof he's right at a Catholic fundraiser where Robbie can't get an insider golf buddy to admit anything because look around. Next up, the crew chats with former priest Sipe, who did a study that shows that 6% of priests possibly abuse minors, meaning that in some quick math reveals there could be 90 predators in Boston alone. It's now time to use the sick leave pattern as a way to reverse engineer where the problem priests might be. So the Howard Shore score kicks in, and heck yeah, it's a journalism montage, baby. The crew works together to identify 87 possible priests in the Boston area, including one of the treatment centers that is just down the road from Maddie, who lets his kids know to stay away with a note on the fridge. Robbie and Sasha confront McLeish again and indicates that he sent those names years ago and they did nothing. They had the names and they blew it. Sorry, wrong movie. McLeish resends a list of 45 names, and with this new ammunition, the whole team gets together to strategize the big picture. Marty makes it clear that the story is the institution and not just the individual priests. So Sasha then does some door-to-door journalism as we hear bits and pieces from victim after victim about keeping quiet, not stirring the pot, some willing and many not willing to talk. Finally, Sasha runs into Father Paquin, who easily and quickly admits to fooling around with the boys, but says he didn't get any pleasure from it and he didn't assault anyone because he knows that because he was also assaulted. Sasha pushes further, winning Rachel McAdams an Oscar, but can't get any further than that because Paquin's sister slams the door in her face and tells her never to come back. Off to court now, where Garabedian lays out how he got the important documents into public record a while ago, but that they're somehow missing now because the church had them removed, maybe? But he might be able to get them refiled, which could just be the smoking gun that they need. Meanwhile, things are getting personal for Robbie, who realizes a priest at his own school is on the list. Everything is coming together, and then September 11th, 2001 happens, and the only news the Globe is understandably interested in for a while are the attacks. Michael asks Garabedian to hold off on refiling those documents, and Sasha tries to convince Snap Leader Phil that this isn't the end. Months later, Garabedian does refile the docs, and so the journalisming? Sure. Mm-hmm. Has no choice but to be back on. Robbie finds a friend who was a victim at his school, and after a comedy of errors, Michael gets into the courthouse finally and gets a judge to make the public records actually, public? Mm-hmm. Robbie goes across the street to his school to get more information about the troubled priest from his school, and he and Sasha realize that higher people on the chain are starting to pay attention. After renting a copier for $83, Michael finally gets the smoking gun docs about the church knowing about this pattern. Mike then confronts the team with it, and despite this new evidence, Robbie says it's not quite enough to get the system yet. Mike gets pissed, wins an Oscar for Mark Ruffalo, and slams the door on his way out. A judge rules in favor of releasing the documents, which leads to a meeting with Ben and Marty, where Robbie's forced to show them the smoking gun documents, and that poor schmuck Pete has to step out of the room. They decide to give the team until January to run the story right before the other documents will be made public. Another journalism montage ensues, this time to a Catholic children's choir singing Silent Night. And it gets us closer and closer to the deadline as victims are interviewed. And finally, Robbie has to go face to face with his golf buddy, Jim. He tells Robbie to get out of his house, but then follows him outside, asking him to share in the blame and then giving Robbie what he needs for confirmation by circling every single name on the list. With 6 hours to press, Mike and Maddie get a final call from the church saying they have no interest in even knowing the questions for the interview and will not comment. As the crew gets ready to release, they debate the scumbag lawyer who knew all along, and Robbie says, well, what about us? And we all realize there's plenty of blame to go around when darkness remains hidden. After the story comes out, we see various people reconciling with the information and proof that abuse continues as Garabedian is still getting young abuse clients. Robbie and Mike go into work on a Sunday, and after Robbie parks in a handicap space, which was weird, they go in to find that the article has the phones ringing off the hook in the spotlight office as the victims are pouring in with their evidence and stories. After a perfect roll credits moment, the text lets us know that 600 stories were published and over 1,000 victims reported, as well as then 4 full pages of small print locations of where scandals were uncovered since. And though it's certainly good that they're finally being caught, that last bit of devastating reading is definitely a sin. And that is Spotlight. What did you guys think going through this movie again?
Oh, this movie's so good. I can't remember what my favorite Best Picture nominee was back then. I think Mad Max Fury Road was my ultimate number one that year. And then you have stuff like The Martian that was nominated, and you had The Big Short, which I love. I've probably seen The Big Short more than any of these movies, but this is one of those where it won Best Picture, and I wasn't like, oh, that's upsetting. That should have been this or that or whatever, because this movie is so good. I think what I like the most about it is that it cuts out a lot of fat that a lot of movies might decide to go after. Like, it might go after a lot of, like, let's see what these guys' personal lives are like, and they hint at that, but that's all we really need to know. I mean, their personal lives are really not that good, right? They're just they're always on the story, and they have either someone who is understanding of that, or they have nobody.
And, yeah, like, sorry, just to interject on that, like, I had to watch the movie, I think it was the third time through before I realized that Mark Ruffalo's character was married and just separated because of the journalism.
Right, right. But it shows just, like, you know, if you're going to be on stories like this, you don't have much of one. Your spouse, significant other, is going to have to be understanding, or you're just not going to have a spouse or significant other. But it cuts out a lot of the fat, and it goes straight to what, like, a story does. It just says, okay, here's something that we need to, here's something we've learned about. How do we figure out what the real story is in this? And it just kind of, like, keeps diving into each layer to get to the center. And it does it very methodically. And the pace of this movie is incredible. It gets to the end very quickly, even though it's like a little over 2 hours. So I really love the structure. I really love how the movie just dives into the story. Talking with the victims in this one is another thing that I admire about this movie, because, you know, there's at the beginning, you see Sasha talking to one of the guys who I recognize from Only Murders in the Building.
Yeah. Michael Creighton, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. And he wants to say words like, he molested me. And he's like, well, I think language is very important here. Even though it's really hard for you to talk about, people need to know exactly what it is. And she's exactly right, because when you just say the word molest, there's a number of things that could be. It's not, none of them are good, obviously, but, like, just one of the, you need to kind of explain to people exactly what it is so that they know, that they can get in their head. This is some horrible subject matter, but you talk about, you know, when you hear about women being abused and everything, a lot of times just like, oh, her husband slapped him around a bit or whatever, or, you know, people try to like lower the crime in their minds. And then if you actually see video footage of any of this happening, it is stunning how far dudes will go to beat people, and it's like, oh my god, I didn't realize it was that bad. So, like, getting back to this topic, having someone say this is exactly what happened, I think is really important. in all of this. There's an underlying thing going on in here about journalism too, and they don't really talk about that much in this, but you can see it bubbling at the surface. The idea of going after this story could be financially ruinous to a newspaper because a lot of their readership is Catholic, and there's this capitalism thing that's running, like, sort of rearing its ugly head over the story because, oh, we don't want to piss off our readership. It's like, won't your readership want to know about this story? That's what the Liev Schreiber is saying basically in here. And like, who cares if we lose some subscribers over this? This is something they need to know. And that's what I really, really, that character, I know, and what is his actual name? Is it Mark something? Marty Baron. These movies really benefit from having someone who really truly believes in journalism in at the heart of it. And I don't want to mention another movie here just in case it's a super secret double feature, but you need to have that because it sets the tone for the entire thing, for their motivations for going out and doing these things. I could never be a journalist like these people are journalists. I'm so happy that there are people out there that can do this type of stuff because I sure can't. Yeah. The type of people who would go and talk to somebody and then that person gets pissed off and then they come back to their editor and the editor's like, you need to talk to that person again. And it's like, but I just pissed him off. I just pissed this person off completely. How are they ever going to talk to me? But they keep persisting over and over and over. I love Rachel McAdams, by the way. I think I've always loved her, but I just, in this movie, I love her the most. That scene where that dude is saying, you know, like, I received no pleasure from this. And like, I know this isn't rape because I was raped and all that. Her performance during that scene is incredible because she goes to a non-judgy thing where she's like, tell me about that. Yep. You know, like, and it's not like she doesn't immediately damn him for saying this thing, because if she does, she knows she's not going to get the information that she's going to. And I just love that performance all the way through. Ruffalo is an interesting one for me in this one. He's good. He's probably like that I don't know, emotional heart of the story kind of guy in this. But he's doing this thing. I had the Blu-ray of this, and so I've seen the real people. There's a little short that's on the Blu-ray with the actual reporters and everything talking about them on the story. So the actual guy he's playing, Mike Resendez, has this kind of, I don't know, affect to him in some way where he's kind of scrunches up his mouth a little, and you can see that Ruffalo is actively trying to get that guy. Need to nail that. And it's distracting all the way through. It's not distracting when you actually see the real guy, but it's distracting seeing Ruffalo trying to be the real guy. But he's still, I love Ruffalo. So this is a great performance for him, obviously, but, I love him in this, of course. Michael Keaton, and John Slattery makes me laugh every single time. I don't know what it is. He's perfect for this, right? He's just perfect to be Ben Bradley's kid. He's perfect to for this kind of role. So the performances across the board are great, and I just love how the story unfolds. And yeah, it's really good.
Yeah, the connection there I didn't know about until I was researching for the show of who his father was, who that character's father was. The first time I watched this movie, I'm going to make a confession. The first time I watched this movie, I was really distracted by a really stupid thought, which was that the hierarchy of the characters didn't match what I viewed the hierarchy of the actors playing them. Like, it really stuck in my craw for 5-10 minutes that the guy from Mad Men was Batman's boss. That, like, it felt to me, this is dumb, but it felt to me like, well, the boss role should go to the more established actor, but that's not the case at all. The Robbie role that Keaton plays is a much meatier role and has a lot more screen time. I wanted to make that confession. This time through, I found myself watching Keaton's character arc, in that he spends the whole movie coming to grips with his own culpability in not having exposed this. My favorite moment is when they leave the school and she says, it's like everybody knows the story before us. And he says, yeah, and we work right there, and points at the globe, which is directly across the street from where this is happening. And that is one of many dominoes before he finally gets to that last scene where he admits, yeah, I was the Metro editor. I don't remember doing this. I was new on the job, but yeah, this was me. I have to own that. And I think that's really important because clearly the evil here are the priests and the church covering it up and everyone that comes along with covering that up. But that does not remove the rest of society from culpability of any kind. And I think that may be the movie's main message, is that we have to do better looking out for each other, sniffing this stuff out, especially like Aaron said, that four-page title card at the end of all the cities around the world where similar, that's just the Catholic Church. The Southern Baptists have had the same kind of exposure. A youth pastor resigns after sleeping with a teenager. Story happens every week in this country.
Well, and by the way, like that's the sneakiness of playing the percentages a lot of times where they say 6%. Now the movie immediately goes to, oh, that's a lot, but a lot, if you say 6% in a newspaper, that sounds like, oh, that's very low. That's not, that doesn't happen that often or whatever, but they found 90 priests after that 6% thing. And that just goes to show, like, yes, the chances of you being at a church like this, where this is happening, are low. But the chances of it, the fact is that 6% is still an extremely high number. You don't, I mean, you've got to put that into perspective on that. And they certainly do. And it's not just 90 priests. It's all the people that they affected from the 90. So you're talking about, again, like they said, 1,000 people by the end. Anyway, sorry to break it.
No, you're good. I liked what you said, Chris, about Liev Schreiber's character kind of being the journalistic anchor here. We need him to be, like, he's so dry that initially they're like, oh, he's the barrel of laughs, but he's never rude. Like, never once rude. He's just simply taking the absolute shortest path through the conversation. I love the scene where Slattery says, Marty, in the past, Spotlight's had success in part because they picked their own stories. And he pauses and turns and says, would you consider picking this one? He's just so even keeled, and he knows where he wants to go. And I appreciate the acting work there, because it's not as showy of a role as some of the other ones in the movie. I love the moment in the basement where all three of them realize at the exact same moment that sick leave, look, Ruffalo says it, it's an official designation, and there's like a beat, and all three of them start grabbing the books as fast as they can. Yeah. The team upstairs. I love that moment. I love when non-dialogue acting, collaborating between multiple actors, can actually make a moment like that feel real. One of the only other things I wanted to say is this time through, I noticed, it stood out to me, I guess I should say, that Mike writes the story by himself. And as I think about that, that makes sense. They're an investigative team. They're all journalists, but writing may not be the main strong point for each of them. Clearly, Sasha's main strong point is interviewing people and getting information out of them. And so I just thought that was interesting that Mike is probably the best writer of all of them, and that's why he gets that assignment. Right. The only other thing I wanted to say, just for myself personally, this movie was a pretty big part of my own personal spiritual journey and coming to grips with how I feel about religion and the church. Because of that, I'm thankful this movie exists. I'm thankful this movie is as good as it is, because it's important, man.
Yeah. One other thing to touch on, something that Aaron brought up in the synopsis, is I also love the fact, this is again going back to Liev Schreiber and everything and what he does in this, but it sounds like the only story here is, you know, I don't know if that's how I'd characterize it, but they want to write the story about there's 87 priests, and that seems to be the big story here. But he's saying, no, we need to find a way to change all of this. And the way we change all of this is by saying the system is what is bad and what we need to write about. And so he talks about how the Catholic Church covering it up is the big story here. And that the 87, while that is mind blowing, is I don't know what you would call it. You wouldn't call it less important story. You would just say that in order to affect change, you can't just say this happened. You have to say, why was it allowed to happen? And then get it to the top and everything. And that's why I think there's an important distinction in this for them as a paper, what angle they go at on this. Because if they just say, well, this happened, then all the Catholic Church has to do is like say there's just a bunch of bad apples. I believe they say that exact word, those exact words in there. There's just a few bad apples, and we got rid of them, or they're just moving them is all they're doing. But I thought that was a really, really key part of that movie as well. Anyway.
You guys have touched on a lot of the things I wanted to go deeper on. I'll add a few thoughts. One thing, I think I mentioned competence porn last week. This is another competence porn movie, just how amazing the journalism is in this movie where, it's just watching people who are great at their job be great at their job is another part of this movie that I really enjoyed. I think it's really important, both what you said, Chris, about the Sasha conversation about going into detail and not just broad terms, and then also, Jeremy, what you said about the overall point of this movie, which I agree with you, I think is about communal culpability. It is about the idea of how we are comfortable as long as the darkness isn't invading us, right? Like, and so what keeps us comfortable is, like Sasha was talking about, is just being able to go molested. Okay, that's over there under that blanket. I don't have to think about it. I don't have to specifically wrestle with what that means. I get to just live in my own world and know that something bad happened to someone, and I hope it doesn't happen again. And and so there's this element of specific details forcing us to go to take action, to be more vocal, to be more understanding of the darkness happening, so that systems can't continue to systematically harm people in ways. I think this subject matter is very close to police brutality as far as cultural culpability and ideas, like this idea of one bad apple. It's just one bad policeman, that did this one thing or whatever. And I do have a little bit of sense of, compassion for good people who are priests or good people who are police officers, but that doesn't change our responsibility to go, this isn't just one bad apple. There is something about the system that is resulting in a high likelihood of this happening against other systems, right? So in this case with the church, my personal opinion is it has a lot to do with sexual repression. It has a lot to do with the idea of not teaching people of faith, true, honest integration of sexuality into their lives, but ignoring it and saying that it's something that, can only happen in this context. And when it does, we don't talk about it, and so again, lack of details, lack of specificity. I'm not asking us to go all around and tell our sexual stories. I'm just saying there is an element of repression in the church that leads to, I think, damaged human beings who are, like they said in the movie, sexually arrested at a certain age where they don't, understand their own sexual urges. They don't understand what sexuality means to them.
There's also an intimacy sometimes about the faith when you're like praying with a pastor or a mentor. Mm-hmm. It's not the same as romantic intimacy, but it is intimate. And I think that is also part of it.
Mm-hmm. I think you're right.
The movie does a really good job of describing that too, when the victims are talking about how they're so young, they don't know what's going on.
Right.
The second thing is they look at the priests as if they are God, which is, that is of course, I think a really bad misstep, religions in general to consider the the mouthpiece to be the thing they're talking about. Mm. And the mouthpiece is just as human as anybody else. Mm-hmm. So, that's what gets you. He's sitting there thinking that first guy is like, it's like God himself is talking to you. And like, and he's like, oh, you got a chance to like, you know, the first guy, I think it's Saviano that talks about like, you know, he tells you to like help you clean up the rectory and you do that. And it's great because, hey, it's like God is asking you for help. And then he turns and tells a little dirty joke and you're like, oh, okay, well, I'll let that slide or whatever. And then he starts, you know, and then he starts taking his clothes off in front of you and stuff like that. And it's like all these things you just let slide. And especially when you don't know any better, it really shows. Like that movie really does a good job of explaining the power dynamic that is going on mm-hmm. in those things. And that's another thing that I really, really appreciated about
it's them. So good. This movie is so good. I was looking at my letterbox ratings and I've logged everything I can think to log on that site now. And of the, you know, I think about 4,000 movies that I've logged on that site, I've given about 95 stars. And this is one of my 5-star movies that I've given, and I think it mm-hmm. deserves it. Every time I, you know, this is the second time I think, as I mentioned, that I've watched it, and going through it a second time, it's like, yeah, this mm-hmm. is a fabulous movie all around. I did want to talk about a couple of performances that were already mentioned. You mentioned Rachel McAdams, and you mentioned the scene where she goes and talks to the priest who is just crazy up front. Mm-hmm. And I thought of a couple things when you're talking about that scene and then talking about not being able to be a journalist. He opens the door, confirms who he is, and she asks him, did you abuse any boys as a... Like, straight out just mm-hmm. asks him the question.
Yeah.
And he answers, and yeah. that's why you asked the question, I guess. Exactly. And what's amazing about her performance in that moment, and these are my favorite parts of acting, is when you can read one thing on the surface and another thing underneath. And mm-hmm. you mentioned that she's non-judgmental on the surface or whatever, but you can read her shock. Yep. Underneath. Yeah. It's so yep. good and so subtle. And I think there was some conversation about her not deserving her awards for this. And then it was just kind of a nothing. And I completely disagree. I think she's doing incredible work in this movie. And I mm-hmm. love that the Academy recognized it.
Yep.
Because it's really, really good. I actually like Ruffalo's performance. I didn't know that thing about The Imitation. So it didn't distract me like mm-hmm. it distracted you.
I didn't know that he was doing that at first.
Until later.
But I was like, why is he doing this thing, though, with his mouth? He's doing a thing. And I'm like, what is the thing? And so then I saw the actual guy. He's not doing it nearly as pronounced or anything right. like that. You can see what Ruffalo's trying to get at with it and everything.
The IMDb even says between every take, Ruffalo would go over to the real Mike Resendez and have him read the line he was about to read.
Oh, that's amazing. Yeah. I love that. That's great. I will probably notice it now. Like, it is something like, I'm sure you're right. But I haven't noticed it the 2 times I've watched it. And what I have noticed is that character is so well-defined, as are all the characters in this movie. That human being is so well-defined as this mm-hmm. type of person, right? This energetic, always running, always going to do the next thing, just, dog with a bone kind of personality. And I just think he pulls it off really, really well.
That's another thing too about this, that you just sit here. There's a big moment for Resendez in this where he's talking about like, we need to come out with a story right now. We yeah. need to do this. And it just goes to show the unfortunate timing. This is another thing, by the way, that the capitalism is kind of rearing its ugly head in the movie, and it's not really saying anything about it at all. But the fact that they can't do anything about the story right now because other newspapers will go out there and start beating them to like big stories and everything is another just huge, like, yes, of course everybody needs to know this right now, but you can't do it right now because you could miss a lot of other things because of that and right. everything. It's just an unfortunate little, I don't, you know, who is there a fix to this? Probably not. But like, it just, it's another thing that you're sitting there going, you feel Ruffalo's frustration there and everything, but you're also with Michael Keaton when he's like, can't do it right now. We just can't. If we did it right now, we miss the whole story.
I do love in that scene, just the open disdain for the Herald, the other paper in town. Like they're all positive the Herald is going to fuck this story up if they get it first. There's no question in their mind.
It's amazing. The final thing I wanted to talk about is probably this time through the most impacting moment of the movie for me. It's towards the end after the story has come out and people are reconciling with this. And Sasha sits with her mom as her mom is reconciling with this institution that she has respected and given her life, you know, to, and been able to shuffle the odd story into this category of bad apples or whatever. And the dynamic of not just the mother realizing or having to wrestle or figure this out, but of Sasha trying to understand her place there and her relationship to her mother and their understanding together. I don't know. I was supremely moved by that. I was in tears at that moment through the end of the movie.
Her mom or her grandmother?
Oh, maybe it's her grandma. I'm sorry. It might be her grandma. I may have missed the actual relationship.
Sure. She even says earlier in the film, I've stopped going to church with Nana.
I think it is her grandma. I think you're right. Thank you, Jeremy, for the correction.
That's a part of her arc that's there the whole film, because she even talks earlier than that about going to church with them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I found that all that stuff incredibly moving. You know, everybody's journey with faith or lack thereof is different, but it just resonated with me in some, you know, really real ways. So that's good.
All right, let's get on to our super secret double feature.
Need parts now? O'ReillyAuto.com offers in-store pickup, same-day home delivery, or next-day home shipping. Get more parts your way at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
It is Ryan Seacrest here. People always say it's good to unwind, but that's easier said than done. The exception, Chumba Casino. They actually make it easier done than said, or at least the same. Chumba Casino is an online social casino with hundreds of casino-style games like slots and blackjack. Play for fun. Play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Sign up now and collect your free welcome bonus at chumbacasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18+. Terms and conditions apply.
Be very, very quiet.
Secret. What secret?
Our dirty little secret.
I tell you something I've never told anyone.
I guess I'll go first. Jeremy came on Slack a couple of days ago and said, I've thought about 17 movies that this could be a double feature. And he's absolutely correct. I thought of it. I'm not going to name them here, but I thought of a lot that he's probably going to name here. And I hope I'm not taking one of his. I don't think I am, even though I know you love the medium that I'm about to talk about. But what it reminded me of, what I think this goes along with very well and has a lot of synergy to it, is the fifth season of The Wire.
You know what? I thought of that. I didn't write it down, but that came to my mind. That's amazing. Go ahead.
It's hard to make this a double feature. I mean, you're talking about 10 hours of TV and then a movie, but there's too much going on for the fifth season of The Wire to not say anything here, because Tom McCarthy plays a reporter in the director of this movie plays a reporter in the fifth season of The Wire. There's a big storyline in it where Dominic West is playing he's a cop who's pretending to be a guy who kills homeless people. And in he is getting this in the newspaper. The Tom McCarthy character knows this story is bullshit, but keeps doing the stuff. So both sides of the story know the story is bullshit, and then they just keep throwing this stuff out there the whole season, and it's hilarious and scary at the same time. But I saw this thing from David Simon when they asked him about season 5, and this goes a lot along with what's going on here in Spotlight. He says, yes, last season, the last theme is basically asking the question, why aren't we paying attention? If we got everything right in the last 4 seasons and depicting the city state, how is it that these problems, which have been attendant problems, regardless of who is in power, how is it that they endure? That brings into mind one last institution, which is the media. What are we paying attention to? What are we telling ourselves about ourselves? A lot of people think that we're going to impale journalists. No, it's not quite that. What stories do we want to hear? How closely do they relate to the truth? How distant are they from the truth? We have a story idea about media and consumers of media. What stories get told and what don't? And what? Why is it that things stay the same? And what's happened to the Baltimore Sun locally is what has happened to that whole second tier of journalism. Below the New York Times and the Washington Post, they're being eviscerated by price per share. There used to be 500 reporters. Now there are 300. They keep telling us that they can do the same job. They just need to be more effective. Bullshit. 500 reporters is 500. 300 is 300. You can't cover the city the same way with fewer people. And so it goes a long way with this. Spotlight also has a little 3-minute feature about this very thing that's going on here. Doesn't really get to that kind of like detail. But anyway, I thought we would be remiss not to mention the fifth season of The Wire.
Well, and that's David Simon, who worked for the Baltimore Sun.
Yep.
And since then, the Baltimore Sun has been bought by a billionaire with his own agenda. And the Baltimore Banner has sprung up. You're seeing this in a lot of cities, actually.
Yeah.
Independent journalism funded by the readers. I actually subscribe to the Baltimore Banner because they write about the Orioles and I used to live there. So there's no way to do a double feature to this movie that isn't a second helping of heaviness, right? You can't pair this with Liar Liar or some any kind of comedy. And I really struggled. That's why I had 17 on my list, is that I didn't know if I wanted to go the journalism angle. I didn't know if I wanted to go the uncovering a conspiracy angle. And ultimately, even though I hate when the chat gets to my super secret double feature before I do, I'm going with a doubt. Because I just think if I watch Spotlight, I'm already there. I'm already in that. Mm-hmm. Let's examine this exact issue from a completely different perspective, where we're not really ever told whether or not this guy has done it, but how the accusations and even the hints impact the community around that church and that school. And so, yeah, I'm just going harder at the Catholic Church. We're just going to stay here and watch it out.
Yep. All right. Well, I think those are that's an excellent double feature to go along with this.
Yeah, those are both great choices.
I saw a million in the chat that were really good. Of course, the ones that I thought of during the whole thing, like the basic ones, are All the President's Men, Shattered Glass, especially Peter Sarsgaard in that movie, it reminds me so much of that Liev Schreiber character, someone, the newcomer that comes in and nobody's really quite sure about, but has so much integrity. And he never gets to the point of being hated like Peter Sarsgaard does in Shattered Glass. But all these journalism movies, all the movies where people are getting going to doorsteps and getting denied, like Quiz Show and JFK, and where people don't want to talk about things. I mean, that's it's a genre all of its own.
I have one I want to just bring to the top because it was under the radar just a couple years ago, and it's phenomenal, and it's She Said. I don't know if you guys saw
it. Oh, yeah.
She Said is so good. If you didn't get a chance to watch that a couple years ago, it is also very journalism. It feels very much like Spotlight about Me Too. It'd be the simplified way to say what it's about, but I thought it was great, so.
Yeah.
Yep.
By the way, shout out to Richard Jenkins doing the voice work for Richard Sipe on the phone. It was so unmistakable.
But he's
a longtime Tom McCarthy actor because he was in Station Agent. He was in The Visitor and all of that. So, all right. So a couple of announcements here. First off, we will not be back for another 2 weeks due to the holidays. I know we normally do stuff for the holidays, but this time it wasn't going to work out. So we're going to take 2 weeks off. We will be back January 7th for the live show. Go on to what the homework will be for that. After watching the last movie
The Founder?
The Founder. After watching The Founder and talking about A Perfect World, I wanted to do A Perfect World as our homework. So I ordered the Blu-ray. I don't know if this is like immediately available on streaming. Do we have a free one somewhere?
I think it's VOD. I think it's like $3.
You have to pay $3.
Yeah.
Pay $3. Okay. I haven't seen this movie in forever, but I know that I love it. And this is a one of those hidden Clint Eastwood directed movies, like one of those that you may not immediately think of this when you think of Eastwood's directing career. And it came out around the time Kevin Costner was becoming so much more powerful and like he had become a director himself, that I often will think this is a Kevin Costner movie that he directed, but it's Clint Eastwood. So, I haven't seen this in forever. So I wanted to get a fresh take on that one. And I know it's good. And I know that, Jeremy and Aaron both like this. So, that's what we're going to be coming back to in 2 weeks for this. So there you go. All right, well, that's gonna do it. Thank you guys, thanks chat for coming out. Boy, a lot of really good discussion in chat today. Very mm-hmm. very good. Very much appreciate you coming out. Yep. And happy holidays, happy new year to you guys. I know it sounds like just a sign off, like we're just saying, hey, thanks chat, whatever. We really do value you. Mm-hmm. And really, really happy that you guys come by every week to sit here and watch us, ruminate about movies and probably get frustrated every once in a while when we don't say the thing that you're thinking. So very much, very much happy that you guys come out. Anyway, happy holidays, happy new year to all of you. We'll be back in 2 weeks. So we'll see you next time.
Bye-bye. See ya.
Bye.
Bye. Be a part of the live show by being a member of the Sin Club at Patreon at patreon.com/cinemasins. Chat with us on the CinemaSins Discord at discord.gg/cinemasins or CinemaSins Twitter at CinemaSins, and email any comments or questions to recotopia@cinemasins.com. That's recotopia@cinemasins.com.
Save big this holiday season. All in the Kroger app. Buy two, get three free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up. Then get a flavorful Kroger spiral sliced ham for 89 cents a pound with an additional $25 purchase. Limit two, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Ryan Seacrest here. When you have a busy schedule, it's important to maximize your downtime. One of the best ways to do that is by going to ChumbaCasino.com. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino games like spin slots, bingo, and solitaire that you can play for free for a chance to redeem some serious prizes. So hop on to ChumbaCasino.com now and live the Chumba life. Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18+. Terms and conditions apply.